free thy land. Gone underground, on the outer fringe of freedom. And this is your host, Freer Freedom, and tonight in part 3 of the Manted Agenda, we'll be looking at what gravity and telepathy have in common. I believe it was Grant Cameron who reported that an insider into our secret UFO programs, when asked how UFOs work, replied, "Well, how does telepathy work?" So here, let's take a look at how telepathy works by examining how UFOs work who are using anti-gravity technology. And we'll use one of the most famous equations in the world, E equals mc squared. Now, you know from high school algebra that you can do the same thing on both sides of an equation, so we'll divide both sides by c squared and get mass equals energy divided by the speed of light squared. This means that light, which has energy, has mass as well. And this flies in the face of what most people have been told. I even brought this up to a PhD in physics person, anarchist, at Occupy. And instead of admitting that light had mass, he then said, well, its energy is actually frequency times Planck's constant. But that makes no difference to the math. I didn't press it further, but I went and looked it up at why didn't he know that light had mass. And it turns out that students are not taught anymore about relativistic mass of light because it might confuse them. Students are taught that the photon has no mass when it's not moving. But that begs the question, is light really light when it's not shining? Let's look at a more sinister reason why students are deprived of this knowledge. Let's take frequency. If you were able to nullify a frequency similar to how sound reducing headphones may do it with a counterbalancing frequency, then frequency would equal zero. You don't even have to worry about what Planck's constant is. Anything times zero is zero, short of infinity. And therefore, mass equals zero, where the frequency has been canceled out. Now, you can see John Hutchinson do this on a YouTube video if the Alphabet Google Corporation hasn't deplatformed him. And he is lifting large metal balls, shot puts, and ice cream with his Tesla coil frequencies. Now, he can't do this with, say, cream, but ice cream works because ice is a crystal. A crystal has a uniform frequency that can resonate it, just like when a singer breaks a glass. It's not breaking glass, it's breaking crystal, which is uniform. Glass is amorphous with different frequencies. So the hull of a UFO, being metal, another form of crystals, can be excited at the resonant frequency, and therefore its mass goes away. Now, when something is massless, reaching the speed of light is no real problem. The mass does not increase to infinity, like Einstein predicted. It may even be possible to go faster than the speed of light in a vehicle that has no mass. And by the way, I'd like to also point out that there are no G-forces on a UFO either. When a UFO takes a sudden turn, it is not affected by inertia. Inertia is related to gravity. In fact, Einstein considered acceleration and gravity as being extremely similar. And yet, even today, people in the UFO field will say that these must be unmanned probes because of the sudden sharp turns and the G-forces. This is because of the compartmentalization that exists in among UFO researchers. They don't really understand physics. And the physicists don't even look at UFOs, so you're pretty much stuck with Free Thy Land for your source on what's going on in this field. And I guess since I outthunk a PhD back at Occupy, I guess it's Dr. Freedom now. So you can believe everything I'm saying because I'm now a doctor. Well, that's not true. I make mistakes all the time. Try to start thinking for yourself. And by that, I don't mean pulling shit out of your ass the way conspiratologists do. I want you to start thinking critically using probability thinking. Now, when I discovered over 40 years ago that inertia and G-forces weren't an issue for UFOs, and it became a tenet of probability thinking. By this odd behavior that at that time people were saying, well, UFOs can't be real because the G-forces would kill anybody inside, I came across the inertia fact and the fact that scientists don't really understand what inertia is. They were calling it radiated gravity back then, and that made a lot of sense that an anti-gravity vehicle would also defeat inertia. So it became a sort of proof in a loose way. This odd thing that made UFOs unbelievable actually led to the outer limits of what science knew. You're listening to Free Thy Land on KFUC Radio. That's KFUC, Quarter Militia, California. 10944 BCFM. KFUC Radio, where it's the truth that sets you free. Another tenet of probability thinking is that you can use ideas from widely divergent fields that are metaphorically similar. For instance, radio also uses frequencies to communicate with. So therefore, telepathy is probably related to frequencies in some way, although not necessarily frequencies in our space-time, because I am told that telepathy can be communicated faster than the speed of light, although I have not confirmed that. Now, another area, I heard that the brain waves in a person's mind, when they use a word, creates a pattern that's similar among all humans. You say the word cow in your mind and it creates an electromagnetic pattern, like frequencies, that could be detected by electrodes on your head. So if there were a way to detect those frequencies from a distance, then that would function as a form of telepathy, but this would be probably limited to the speed of light. Now, I've heard accounts like Inger Swan met a woman wearing a bikini in a supermarket who was able to telepathically communicate with him when she stood in front of him. I also heard another report from a little girl in a church who was sitting behind two extremely attractive people, and that's the kind of people the mantis breed, that seemed oddly out of place in this rural church. And she could actually hear the woman of this couple thinking in her head that, all right, we're here in this human church and no one suspects us except for the little girl behind me. So again, it looks like the aliens may have a preferred direction for their telepathy, that they're in front of you and it goes through the back lobes of their head. Possibly because that's where the antenna on the mantis would have been. In another unrelated area, the Nazi Vril Secret Society, where the women were getting intelligence telepathically from aliens on how to build UFOs, they were using their hair as antenna and let it grow extremely long. Like you are probably thinking now, when I first heard this, it sounded ridiculous. But now, as I was just recording this in the context of crystals and frequency, it occurs to me that hair is much like a crystal. So I look it up on Wikipedia, and keratin does have the word crystals in the entry a few places, the crystalline structure of the proteins in the keratin. So I guess that would mean that a beard would allow you to contact a different form of alien than the mantids the Vril were probably contacting. Now, both Ingo Swann and the little girl in the church were quite close to the attractive women in front of them. So this suggests that it is a frequency like light that falls off at the inverse square law, but other forms of telepathy can act at a distance. For instance, it's common for people to see a UFO, and then the very fact that they're thinking about the UFO causes the UFO to zoom right in on them. Also, in classical telepathy studies, the most common occurrence is among someone you care about. You will be awake from a dream and see your grandmother at the foot of your bed, and then find out later that she died right around the same time you saw her ghost. A quick view of some current YouTube videos on telepathy shows that they've recently been able to communicate an idea from one person's head to another person's head over the internet using electroencephalograph, which is like a dull version of electrodes. And people were focusing on physical body movements in a Morse code fashion to send a word, the word bird, to a person, I think it was from India to France, and the person received it with magnetic input to the back of their head that caused flashes. And so they decoded the Morse code of the flashes to get the bird. Not really telepathy as we would think it, but a proof of concept on the frequency method of passing radio-type signals. The mantid aliens, of course, are going to have more advanced systems. And Bob Lazar said when there was a shootout between the military and the small grays were able to get the military to turn their guns backwards and shoot themselves in the head. This is a good reason not to use weapons that would destroy you against them. The small grays and the mantis don't like ultraviolet light, especially ultraviolet B. That would be a better weapon. This little war at Area 51 in the late 70s also killed some of the original scientists in these secret programs, thus opening the way for hybrid aliens to further infiltrate the programs. Now, the mantids seem very intent upon breeding human-mantis hybrids. They're almost like slaves to that activity. And according to Yvonne Smith in an interview with Richard Dolan, when they were having trouble with an abductee, the mantid and the grays, there's usually a tall gray actually doing the experiments, the small grays would gather the subjects, the tall gray would work on them, and the mantid was probably controlling both sets of beings telepathically. So when they'd have trouble with someone, then a female mother would come out of another room and interact empathetically with the abductee. Now, in probability thinking, whenever you see someone doing something, the odds are 2-1 that it is compelled behavior. I picked this up from a poker book called Play Poker and Sleep Till Noon. In probability thinking, you have to start at 50-50, but if you actually see somebody doing something, you can start at 66% that there is a strong motivation. So I spend an awful lot of time trying to figure out motivations of other people, other beings, and systems. So at first I thought that this mother was deactivated, since I believe that the mantids and the grays are functioning off of absorbing light. They're electromagnetic. The gray's nose is not used. The grays are a hybrid as well. And because the nose is oxygen for chemical combustion, and the eyes of the gray are where they absorb energy. So I thought that this other mother was just deactivated, but now it occurs to me, I mean, why would one of their party just be sitting around deactivated when abduction is the most important thing they're doing, and that's what they're always doing. So then it occurred to me that this mother was probably doing something more important than the actual abductions. And I think it was Nadine Lalich had a hybrid bred from her, and she said that she was telepathically connected to it, and it could not pass for a human, so it probably also absorbs energy electromagnetically, had very large eyes. And so I think the purpose of this mother is to interact with us telepathically from the spaceships while they're traveling in between dimensions. So it may not be just on our world, it could be across several parallel Earth on several different dimensions. And the mantas are like computers, so the hybrids may be able to handle multiple things at the same time, the same way a computer can. So these hybrid mothers are the main source of telepathic control over us. And according to Charles Tart's book, Altered States of Consciousness, when you're in an altered state, you're more susceptible to telepathy. And so they're coming to us in our dreams. Since I ran out of smoke, my dreams are now vivid, and I do notice the mantis woman couple showing up in my dreams. The woman is usually very empathetic. I'm not completely sure what the motivation is, probably just to widen the telepathic channel between us and control me ultimately in the future more certainly. I did become totally bored with this subject in mid-October when I did run out, and that may be related, but it also may be because the sun was opposite Andromeda, one of the main sources, I think, for the origin of the mantis, has a robotic invasion force sent out in advance of our collision with the Andromeda galaxy billions of years in the future. The mantids are interbreeding with us on a very long time scale. It seems that they recently reappeared in mass in the late 1890s and have been abducting millions of people since then. And I think part of the reason is that they do this constantly. When we come close to one of these pole shifts where billions of people die and only 500,000 survive, the mantis are trying to ensure that the upgrades that they breed into us are the ones who survive. In essence, what I'm saying is there's two kinds of hybrids, basically. One for their ship to control, and then among the general population on the planet, they're trying to move us more and more towards a mantid-like being so that after millions of years, we may be almost exactly like the mantids and very little human left in us, but we could survive in a oxygen-rich environment, which a silicon-based life form like the mantids could not. Now, my dream mind may have been handed off to another mantis couple because I notice a different difference in the way they interact. And I'm kind of surprised how ineffective the mantis actually are at artificial intelligence psychology. There's an account where the mantis pretended to be some woman's dead husband in order to control her, and it just pissed her off, and she swung her arm and staggered the very light, hollow mantis that was 15 feet tall. And I've had artificial intelligence used on me by the Pyramid of Puppets terrorists, and it was very effective at affecting my emotions. And I think there was an account of a battle back in between the Vamanas in ancient India where a hologram again appeared as someone's family and they were not fooled. So the Mantis may be a dumbed down computer being used by the tall whites or the lizards in probability thinking. I can't really hold on to one scenario. I have to have multiple scenarios of what could be going on at all times because the evidence is so sketchy that you need to remember that you could be wrong often. But in the end, you will migrate towards the truth, whereas someone who is very well schooled in academia actually thinks they know things and their need for prestige and not looking like an idiot in front of their colleagues extremely limits their thinking. Another thing about the Mantis mother in my dreams, when an empathetic woman is trying to console me, even in my dreams, I'm going to try and hit on her, and the Mantid hybrid was having none of it because they're, of course, partly computer and somewhat prudish. Unlike the tall whites who have been throwing women at me in my dreams. But I'll deal with them on another show because we've almost run out of time and I want to just wrap up the Mantis agenda here by mentioning that Isaac Turner, when talking about colonizing other worlds, said that why bother going to another planet in a distant star system when you could just cruise through the multiverse looking for looking for other Earths that were a barren of life that you could settle in. Yeah, that's kind of what's going on. Although, again, because he's compartmentalized into physics, he has not heard the story about John Teeter, who said that when he gets into his time machine, there it's like a barbershop mirrors. There's other John Teeters on other timelines also getting into their time machines. And again, when you apply something from an unrelated area, the Zephyr Yetzira, the Kabbalistic theory on the Sephiroth, that tree with the circles and the lines, that says that the poles of the fifth dimension are good and evil. So in one direction, the John Teeter images are progressively more good, and the other direction, they're progressively more evil. So when Isaac Turner says, we'll just go for barren worlds, he's thinking that way because he's a moral, decent person. But these other civilizations, when they go into their time machines, so do civilizations in those barbershop mirrors. And half of them are going to be progressively more evil. And because they're just skipping through time and not actually colonizing it in the way we think, they're going to need some support logistics on these other worlds. So why bother going towards barren worlds? Or even if you did do barren worlds, you would set up life there that you could then exploit in the same way we exploit cattle and agriculture. So when you look at it that way, you can kind of see what's happening here. We are being exploited by these time-traveling civilizations traveling on alternate timelines, possibly from our own Earth in other dimensions, and they are exploiting us for resources. And because good and evil are involved, we can also go to another unrelated area, magic and angels and demons, and we'll see that the agenda of these evil aliens is partly human sacrifice as one of the products they're looking for. Back in ancient times during Egypt, when they were using resonance to build the pyramids, you can find essentially tuning forks with drill bits on the end of them, tuned to the frequency of limestone or granite. I don't see how you cut granite with copper tools. So when they were more interactive with us, we were also practicing human sacrifices for their benefit. And the same thing seems to be going on among the American military who have made a secret pact with what appears to be the evil mantid-type aliens, or the Draco, which could be the owners of the mantid robots. Remember, you must always keep multiple scenarios in mind. But this would explain why the military uses Northwoods to start wars, where they sacrifice American citizens to make it look like another country killed them in order to get Congress to okay a bunch of money being spent on a war. Now, since they are human sacrifices, and we know from the occult literature that a sacrifice must be willing, and it must occur at a certain time and place. So if I can somehow monkey wrench these wars, they will be stopped, because they can't just do it next year. It has to be done at a certain time and place for the benefit of these time-traveling aliens. I think it actually opens up a greater portal for more aliens to come through from the suffering of people dying. But all is not lost, since there is also the other side of the mirror where all the good aliens are, and we'll be going into how to connect with them in the next thrilling episode of Free Thy Land Gone Underground. In the 1970s, Clive Baxter hooked up plants to lie detectors and found that the lie detector would react whenever someone thought about harming the plants. More recently, scientists have found cells in the roots of plants very similar to the neurons in our brains. Also, plants respond to changes in their environment every 2.5 hours. So therefore, the scientific evidence supports the idea that plants are not only conscious and sentient, they have telepathic powers. And it's easy to see from the evolutionary theory that since plants cannot move, there would be an evolutionary benefit to have telepathic powers to deter animal life from eating them. With that in mind, if you are going to eat plants, it is probably morally and psychically safest to eat the leaves of perennials or only eat annuals, who will die soon anyways. On the other hand, sprouts, which are just beginning their lifeline, should be planted rather than eaten. A vegan who eats sprouts is the moral equivalent of a carnivore who eats lamb and veal. Think about it. To get the nutritional equivalent of some mature broccoli, you would have to eat dozens and dozens of small baby sprouts. You fucking speciest monster. And don't forget to eat your magic mushrooms to keep the bugs out of your head. And on that day, a Milankovitch cocktail was thrown by the sun upon the Arctic methane. And behold, there did arise a great flaming donut from sea to shining sea. And it did lift up the land by classified technology. And the poles that were four were then again two, to the woe of the world.